November 9th, 1991 was an exciting day for us at Weekend Edition. It was a quiet Saturday, and actor Jeremy Brett was scheduled to come in for an interview. We were great fans of the man who played Sherlock Holmes, a role Brett never envisioned for himself. He was a graduate of Britain's National Theatre, a romantic lead. As Freddie in the film My Fair Lady, he sang and danced, hardly the traits of the world's greatest consulting detective. But when Jeremy Brett died this past week, accolades from around the world made it clear there never was, and maybe never will be, a better Sherlock Holmes. On that November day when he arrived at our studios, Jeremy Brett was not accompanied by an entourage or the trappings of celebrity. He did bring a full pack of cigarettes, which he chain-smoked during the interview. Unlike the tight-lipped, often arrogant character he played, Brett was charming and candid about himself and Sherlock Holmes, whom he would only refer to as you-know-who. He told us that he didn't want the part at first, but then he reread all the Arthur Conan Doyle stories, often referred to as the canon.
And I discovered all sorts of things that I could do if I had had the opportunity to do it. So I said yes, with enormous temerity and a certain amount of fear and an element of excitement, we approached the scripts. I said, but you've asked me to do Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's Sherlock Holmes. These aren't Sherlock Holmes Doyle stories. I mean, the adapter's gone so far away. And the script editor said, Jeremy, you're here to act. Just get on with it. And I tipped the table over and my Dover soul landed in his lap. And that was the beginning of the tussle. I used to take the whole canon with me to every beginning of each film and fight for Doyle. After about a year and a half, I said, listen, if you don't start taking care of me, I may lose interest, because it was such a tussle. But then Granada Studios stepped in and was so remarkable and wonderful and gave me 2 weeks' rehearsal instead of the one. So the first week I could fight for Doyle, and the second week I could work with my fellow actors. And that's basically how it's been ever since.
One of the things that you seem to do that other actors that have portrayed the role have not is play up the less than pleasant aspects of his character. Even with Basil Rathbone, you had the feeling that there was...
Well, Basil Rathbone, first and foremost, is my Sherlock Holmes.
He is?
Yes, because he was the person I first saw. And I can't see me, of course. So he is my Sherlock Holmes.
But do you try to do what he does or try to avoid what he does in order to make it your own? You do want to make it your own.
Well, we are... A few of us in England, we are what we call becomers. In other words, you become the person you're playing, rather like Stanislavski. Not the method, because the method's slightly different, but you become the creature, the person you're playing. In other words, if I'm a sponge, you squeeze the liquid of yourself out and draw in the liquid of the creature of the person you're playing. And so I had to try and give birth to him. I made terrible mistakes. I'm so miscast. I'm a romantic, heroic actor. So I was terribly aware that I had to hide an awful lot of me. And in so doing, I think I look quite often brusque, or maybe sometimes even slightly rude. In fact, Dame Jean Conan Doyle, Doyle's daughter, who's a great personal friend of mine, did once say to me, I don't think my father meant you-know-who to be quite so rude. I said, I'm terribly sorry, Dame Jean. I'm just trying to hide me. She did say a lovely thing to me when I did the play in 1988, which was really to celebrate you-know-who's birthday, who was meant he's 100, ha-ha. For the man who never existed, it's extraordinary to celebrate a birthday. And she did come to the play, and she did write me a sweet letter in which she said, you are the Holmes of my childhood. And that, for me, is the ultimate accolade.
He is described as an emotionally cold character, but I think one of the hallmarks of your performance is that you bring a passion to the role, which is what I think makes him real, which is why your portrayal has been so...
Well, I was talking about becoming. What I mean by that is an inner life. Watson describes you-know-who as a mind without a heart. That's hard to play, hard to become. So what I did was to invent an inner life. I mean, I know what his nanny looked like, for example. She was covered in starch. She probably scrubbed him, but never kissed him. I don't think he probably saw his mother till he was about 8. Maybe he caught a touch of the fragrance of her scent and the rustle of her dress. I guess college days were fairly complicated because he was quite isolated. He probably saw a girl across the quadrangle and fell in love. But she never looked at him. So he closed that door. And he became a brilliant fencer, of course, as we know, and a master at boxing. Brilliant athlete. And many more little tiny little details which you have to kind of make up to fill this kind of well of the Doyle so brilliantly left out.
You do develop a body language for him, though. I mean, whenever he thinks, he makes a pyramid with his fingers and he puts them up in front of his face. And he has eccentric, rather, gestures of the hand.
It's all Doyle.
It's all Doyle.
All Doyle. You see, I couldn't believe it. It's all there. He says there's one moment which really threw me. He says, Holmes wriggles in his seat and roars with laughter. You see, I'd never even thought of Holmes laughing. So I had to go on an extraordinary journey of discovery, and it's all there in Doyle. And what is so extraordinary to me is that no one's done Doyle before.
You had a personal tragedy between seasons. Your wife died.
Joni,
if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, well, Joni... Well, the reason I did Aunt We All was to be with her. I knew at the end of the final problem in 84 that she had cancer. And the lights really went out in my life. And I didn't want to do it anymore. I didn't see any point. And we were going to do all the treatment in England, and then we decided to do it in Boston because... She worked for WGBH. You know she created Mystery.
I didn't know that.
Yes. She created Classic Theatre. And anyway, I lost her on July the 4th, 1985. And I went back to England when the play finished. It didn't finish till the 23rd. I don't know how I did those performances. And said goodbye to the children. And I was contracted to start again on September the 3rd of that year. And they said, well, Jamie, may help if you get back on the bike. Is that an expression you use? In other words, if you get back on the bike...
Back on the horse.
That's
same,
right.
Same phrase.
And I did the next 5 films with the most appalling ill grace, I'm afraid. I mean, I just didn't want to do them. And then I had what is now known... because the TV Guide published it over here, I had an almighty breakdown. And when I came through that, thanks entirely to my darling son David, who was a valiant friend to me through that, I got back on the bike again. And I remember saying, if I can get to Manchester, I'll be all right. And then I made the sign of 4, and I began to feel better, and then I began to feel better with Holmes, and I wasn't quite so cross with him. Because I blamed him a little.
You blamed him?
Well, I was working, you see, so far away from Joan. And it had taken up so much of our last, I discovered to be our last few years. And, time is the great healer. And now, actually, Caleb, my eldest, my legacy from Joan... says that I'm looking much better than he's seen me in years. I saw him 3 weeks ago in California. So slowly, 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 you never get over a loss like that. You get used to it, but you never get over it.
You've done 34 hours of the
I've done
stories.
34 films. I can't remember. There's 3 two-hour films. I've just finished 3 weeks ago a two-hour film. And 2 others, The Sign of 4 and The Study in Scarlet, Hound of the Baskervilles. And the rest are one-hour films.
Mm-hmm. How many stories are there left? I mean,
well, I'm going to complete the canon, thanks to Peter Spina and Granada Studios.
Completing the canon. And then what? I mean, then you will be able to leave him behind.
Well, I don't mind now. I mean, There was a time when people would say, how do you enjoy playing Holmes? And I would say I wouldn't cross the street to meet him. I then discovered that, of course, I meant that he wouldn't cross the street to meet me. Then when I was doing the play, which taught me a very great deal, because I was in touch with people, because filming is quite isolated, and I realized how many children were seeing him and what a hero he was to them, I thought, oh, my, didn't know that. So I thought, my goodness, I have that joy of doing it for children. I think I know why the children love him, and that's because Sir Arthur Conan Doyle endowed Holmes with all the sensibilities of a child up to the age of eight. Then, at the age of eight, of course, you're told not to look out of the window, get on with your Latin syntax, and they begin to diminish those extra senses. Uh-huh. Holmes has them.
Do you think you've learned anything about the powers of observation that he had, that you need for your own art to become these characters that you play?
No.
No.
No. Somebody asked me the other day, do I dream about him? Mercifully, no.
Don't want to take your work home.
No, it's not a miracle. No, my dreams are... I still have my little dog in my dreams, Mr. Binks. My companion. I call him my hand of heaven, actually.
Ah, yeah.
He died 16 years ago. So anyone comes too close, like you know who, woof, woof. No, he never comes in, mercifully.
Jeremy Brett. He died of heart failure Tuesday at the age of 59. He played Sherlock Holmes for 10 years, 41 stories from the canon. The final episodes will be broadcast on PBS beginning in January.